You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K25. Make sure you hit the link in our description, get your copy pre-ordered, and all the good stuff that comes with it. You get some pre-order bonuses, so make sure you hit that link. Support the show, help us do what we do. Myself, Mumutsi, alongside me, Mr. BJ Armstrong and Mr. Scott Perry. Fellas, you have a good weekend.
I had a great weekend. You guys, I missed you guys on the last couple of shows. As you know, I was at one of my favorite places to go. I was at Pittsburgh Steelers training camp, man. So you ask me how my last few days are going. Once I tell you that, you know it was awesome. So awesome time.
Just to clarify for the listeners, Scott isn't going to be their new quarterback. He was just there for other reasons. He's not going to be playing this season, unfortunately.
They would be in big trouble if I was the new quarterback.
BJ, how's things on your side of the world?
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. USA wins the gold.
Just about.
So, we're here. I'm here with my two favorite guys, so I can't complain.
So the USA won a gold medal. The Olympics comes to a conclusion. I don't know about you guys, but it feels for me like the Olympics was over so quickly this year. Like, you know, when you're a kid, it felt like the Olympics lasted the whole summer. The Olympics went by in a flash. I also don't know why they don't do, like, the 100-meter final as, like, the final event, because that's the most exciting one in the Olympic Stadium. But a little bit underwhelming Olympics this year for me. I don't know. How do you guys feel about it?
I love the track and field. I know we're going to talk basketball, and that's what we do. We're here to talk basketball. But, man, I got to give a real shout-out, man, to that Sydney McLaughlin. Lavroni. She is awesome, man. And she's one of the best track athletes I've seen, man or woman. The way she runs that 400 meter hurdle race, best ever. I think of the top 10 times, I think 7 or 8 of them belong to her. She broke her own record again in winning it this year because she was going up against the young lady from the Netherlands who had the other two times that were best in the world, the Femke Bol. Just awesome watching her. I love watching the relays. It was great to see Sha'Carri Richardson finally get her gold medal, and where she ran that great anchor lay in the 4x100. That was awesome, exciting, you know, exciting to watch. So again, I love the that's the part of the Olympics I get into the most is the track and field. Because historically, you see great things and to see so many tremendous athletes and people pouring their hearts out. And a lot of, you know, they've been training for this for 4 years, you know, so, but those were some of the highlights for me outside of the basketball, really were what I saw on the track and
One thing I don't understand about a track and field is Noah Lyles, who we talked about with 100 meters, he came out for the 200 meters, jump in and celebrating before the race even began. Then he did the race, didn't win, and then told everyone he had COVID. If you had COVID, are they going to let you on the track to run? I don't really know. But Noah Lyles continued to become one of the most unlikable people in sports in an interview with Time magazine, because he seems to not be a fan of Anthony Edwards. Adidas, the sponsor of Noah Lyles, invited him to Anthony Edwards' sneaker launch. And he said, you want to do what? You want to invite me to an event for a man who's not even been to an NBA finals in a sport that you don't even care about, and you're giving him a shoe?
Wow.
So he seems to be just a big hater. He seems to be somewhat of a hater. And I guess this is why everyone was against him for the comments he made about world champions of what, even though technically he wasn't wrong with what he was saying. He seems to just be very jealous of NBA players. And he keeps saying in the media that he wants a sneaker. I personally don't know anyone on earth who is out here wishing they were wearing a Noah Lyles signature shoe, because nobody cares. Because for some reason, you could be the fastest. Remember when Usain Bolt was the fastest man in the world and he was super cool? Everyone loved Usain Bolt. Mm-hmm. Noah Lyles just seems to me just like a corny guy. He's just, everything he says in the media, I like him less and less every time I hear him speak. So that's Noah Lyles.
Usain Bolt still is the fastest man ever.
Yeah, there we go.
By 0.2,
yep.
100% easily. So right now, you know, he's the all-time sprinter. Everybody else is in second place behind Usain Bolt. So
absolutely. Absolutely. But Anthony Edwards, even though he hasn't been to the NBA Finals, he did win a gold medal with Team USA, who defeated France in the gold medal match in a game that ended up being pretty close right down to the wire before Mr. Stephen Curry came to save the United States. I think it was, you know, with just 3 minutes left in the game, it was, what, 5 points in it? Or 3 points. Yes. It was a three-point game with 2 minutes 58 remaining. And then Stephen Curry hit a three, hit another three, hit another three, and then another three to seal the win for the United States. And everyone talks about the Olympics is where you find out the real pecking order, the real hierarchy inside Team USA. Well, I saw them giving the ball to Stephen Curry and letting him do his thing. So does that mean Steph Curry is the top dog of that team?
That you tackling that first?
I'm gonna let you have it.
I don't hide from the smoke.
No.
I'm gonna let Mo have it. I'm just gonna sit back and listen. So I'm gonna let you guys.
No.
I saw what I saw. The best of the best are out there, and they're letting the chef get to cooking.
Well, look, as with this U.S. team, I think you just have to look at it from game to game. And the last two games, the semifinals and the finals, those were Steph Curry games. And you do good teams do what they're supposed to do, and they play to who really has it going. And obviously, he had it going. He was difficult for them to guard and to extend. And he, you know, we already know he's arguably the greatest shooter that I've seen in NBA history. And I'm going to say maybe the greatest shooter across the globe, not that I've seen everybody that's ever picked up a basketball, but anybody that's come to my attention, I mean, you know, he's a tremendous shooter. It was on full display at the right time. And I really was happy for Steph Curry because, quite frankly, he had struggled during the friendly games and through the pool play.
Up until
the semifinals. And so I'm really happy for him, because it puts an exclamation mark on his work and a validation for him and what he did for this team. Because to your point, Mo, and I'm sure people inside that locker room know that, without his heroics, first against Serbia in the semifinals game and this game, the finals game against France, the outcome could have been different. And it would have been a lot of pain with USA basketball. But Steph made sure that didn't happen. Congratulations to him. We've seen him show up in big moments throughout his career with the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals. You know, he's been an NBA champion. Now he can be called an Olympic champion. So great for him and great for Team USA.
He once again avoids people having to ask serious questions about Steve Kerr, even though we're all thinking about them. He got away with it and he got his gold medal. But 3 point difference with 3 minutes left in the game, right? And if it wasn't for Steph Curry hitting one of the greatest shots I've ever seen in the history of the Olympics over two defenders, they could very well have lost this matchup with France. BJ, as a resident fan of Team USA, I saw how excited you were in the game against Serbia. How do you feel after this victory? Because it wasn't an all-out dominant performance. You know, I was watching that game thinking, maybe Wemby's the best player on this court. You got to bear in mind, France has still got the number one and number two pick in this year's draft to come through that weren't even playing, and maybe a top five pick in next year's draft that's going to be on the court when we do this again in LA in 2028.
Well, here's what I can say is job accomplished. They came there to win the gold medal. That was accomplished. You can't take that away. Congratulations to everyone involved on Team USA. Players, coaches, executives, everyone involved. Job accomplished. As you can see, the margins are getting smaller and smaller in the differences between these countries now. And we had 12 NBA All-Stars and the semifinals and the finals were very, very competitive. The visuals for that were terrific, very competitive. And you can see the interest that you have globally now, because it isn't just accepted that Team USA is going to win the gold medal. So this is great for the rest of the world. I think it's a true competitive environment. And moving forward, it is very possible, and it's not a foregone conclusion, that when it comes to men's basketball now, that USA is going to be the automatic winner at the gold, standing at the gold medal, you know, for men's basketball. So if there's anything that I took away, everything comes to an end. I think now the rest of the world is here. Forget all this. They've caught up. No, they're right there now. And it's going to be competitive moving forward. And I think it's great. I love the Olympics for three reasons. I love competition. I just love to compete. That's, if there's anything that gets me excited and gets me up, is to be able to compete. And I don't care who it is, who it's against or whatever. I just love to compete. Obviously, if you love to compete, you would rather come out on the winning side than the losing side. And then, you know, you love the entertainment value. So the fact that you saw emerging stars like Wembanyama, you saw brilliance in Jokic, you saw Schroeder, you saw Team Canada, and all of those teams, Germany, all of those teams could walk away and say, man, if we had one player or a shot goes in or something happened, they could have won it. And Team USA, yes, they are the champions, deservingly so. Let one of those shots don't go down. Let Jokic make a shot
mm-hmm.
up from three.
Even France, Isaiah Cordeni had a very uncharacteristic 0 point.
This was a very competitive. So I enjoyed every aspect of it. Clearly, being here from USA, I'm biased to the USA. But overall, I loved it. I even loved the women's aspect. Yep. I thought that was very competitive.
The final of that was crazy.
I love where the game is globally right now. Okay, I traditionally have followed the NBA. Now I am like, okay, I am going to start following EuroLeague now. And I've always had an eye on it. But now these players are really, really good. Mm-hmm. Okay, we had all-stars. France, well, Rudy Gobert is probably the only all-star that was on there. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. obviously Wembanyama, but he hasn't been mm-hmm. named all-star yet. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's a three-point game. Mm-hmm. I mean, something's going on that now all of these titles and all of these things don't really matter. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking at Serbia. All of these titles, other than Jokic, so it literally took a team full of all-stars to be one guy.
And Jokic,
I also don't know.
Why have the Denver Nuggets not signed Bogdanović, given how well he plays when Jokic is on the same team with him? Surely that's who you'd be looking at going again.
The NBA game is a different game, my friend. Mm. Okay, let's start there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just because you play well in
but he plays well in the NBA. He just does it for the Hawks, so not many people watch.
But again, mm-hmm. it's a different game. I think he's a terrific player. However, that's a different game. And vice versa. Just because you're an NBA all-star doesn't mean that you play well when you go to Europe.
Well, Scott,
it's a different game.
I want to get your opinion on this. Gershon Yabusele was a standout player for France. He put LeBron James on one of the best poster dunks I've ever seen. And I know that Clutch Sports and the Lakers must be working hard to get that scrubbed off the internet, but I don't think they're going to be able to get rid of it, because that dunk was simply unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But Yabusele, Matthijs Lassort, the center, and Isaiah mm-hmm. Cordinier, three mm-hmm. players who NBA fans might not have been aware of. Yabusele mm-hmm. spent some time with the Celtics before. He's a first-round pick for them, but he didn't play big minutes. But the three of them are reportedly now looking for NBA contracts. Do you think that their games will be able to translate over in the NBA, or do you think that they're better suited to the EuroLeague style of play that they're familiar with?
It depending on the team and how they want to play. But yeah, in my opinion, Yabusele, I liked him a little bit when he was at Boston, even though he wasn't, you know, playing a lot of minutes, playing behind, you know, some people. for him to play all the minutes he's been playing over in Europe now, I think it's helped prepare him to come back to the NBA. Look, he's physical. I think he's shooting the three ball a lot better than probably what he was doing when he was with the Celtics. He can post you up. We always talk about having good second unit players who can score and play physical. He could be a nice second unit player that could pose some matchup issues for teams. You could play some small ball with him because he's strong enough definitely to play a four, a small ball, five even, you know, the way the game is today. So I really like him. And I, again, in the right situation, I wouldn't be opposed, you know, if I was still in the NBA with the working with the team, be looking very closely at him if we had a need for what he does, depending upon what, you know, my roster looked like. And I'll be honest with you, watching the kid Courtney, he was impressive during the tournament. Yeah, didn't have a good finals game, gold medal game. But up until then, I mean, he was the spark. They're probably not there without him.
He's a player known kind of – the reason why they put him in his starting lineup was for the defense. But then when he got to the starting lineup, he had that quarterfinal and semifinal where he was either one or two on the team in scoring, both of those games.
He was super aggressive. He wasn't afraid of the moment. It looked like he could get his own shot a little bit. And anytime you have a player who understands that he's got to cut his teeth on the defensive end first, like he does, you know, there's always a space for that. So to me, he's another guy that's good enough. It's just finding the right fit. See, when you look at going to get a guy from Europe now, too, you've got the most difficult thing is making it financially advantageous for those players to come back to the States and play in the NBA. Both of these guys you talk about have established themselves well over in the European Professional League. I don't know what their salaries are right now, but I'm sure they're compensated pretty well and they're being paid in Euro dollars. So, for them to come over and play in the NBA, you're not going to get them for a league minimum. You're going to need to probably pay them $3-4 million for them to say, okay, I'm going to, you know, leave my Europe to come back to the NBA. And so that's another thing that comes into play when you're talking about adding those two, you know, those guys. You mentioned Lesort, and he played well, but I probably would have him third behind those other two.
Do you know who owns the draft rights to Matthias Lesort?
Who does that now?
Your New York Knicks, Scott.
The Knicks have him now.
You traded for them in November 2020.
Sure. Okay. But, you know, Mo, we have so many draft rights guys, draft rights hills guys, you get thrown in the deal. So you're right. Now that you say that, I do remember.
Because
his
he
name.
Was part of the deal that landed Emmanuel Quickley on the Knicks with Matthias Lesort. And in exchange for the rights to Leandro Bolmaro, the Argentinian.
Yes. So, Well, when we got Quickley, that was when we secured the 23rd pick from the Clippers.
Yep. Talk about the Knicks needing a backup big all the time. Maybe Lesort is the – I don't know how long the draft rights continue for because Cordinier was drafted by the Hawks in 2016. But the Nets renounced his draft rights in 2021,
The Knicks brought back though Precious though, so it won't.
Oh, they did indeed. They happened live on the show.
Yes, right. They brought back Precious. You know, you still have Jericho Sims, and then they also drafted a French kid this year. I can't pronounce his name. Paco Diamet or whatever. There was.
I've heard enough French for the summertime, Scott. Exactly. I'm going to leave that right alone.
Exactly.
And head back over to the NBA. Now, BJ, a couple episodes ago, you talked about the small market tax, small market teams having to pay a little bit more than what you maybe would pay to keep talented players within their market. And Lauri Markkanen has signed a 5-year, $238 million contract renegotiation and extension, including $220 million in new money. He only had 1 year of $18 million left on his contract, and the Jazz have decided to keep him in Utah. And this signing, I believe, Scott, you can correct me if I'm wrong, means he's ineligible to be traded until next offseason.
That's correct.
BJ, what do you make of this deal for the Utah Jazz? Because a lot of people thought they would go all in to tank, but keeping hold of an all-star caliber player isn't really going to help you tank. So what's your take on this?
Bravo. I think it was the right move, great move. And again, I don't understand the whole tanking phenomenon. I may be in the minority there. We're going to go all in on the tank. So let me get this straight. So Scott, they're going to pay me as an executive, right? Scott, you've been an executive 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. And then my selling point when I go talk to ownership is to get lucky. I don't understand it. So I want to congratulate Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck and all of those people there for investing in their youth and what they're doing, right? You have to figure out how to get to the top. So I think this continues their plight where they have to go. But I don't understand the tanking. I don't get it. It is what it is. I don't probably need to understand it. But, you know, I certainly, as an executive, as a player, I can't look at myself to say my only plan is to get lucky. And we're saying
BJ, you don't have to do that. You can come up with a catchy slogan to disguise it. You could tell them that you're trusting the process.
Okay. And like, again, I'm not that clever. But I can't believe that's where we're at now. But so be it. I'm just watching. But I want to say this. I think Lauri Markkanen is a great player. I think he will help continue them. Do I think they are a championship caliber team at this stage? No, I don't. But I do think at any given moment with a player like him, they're capable, right? And you want to be competitive, and you need that type of veteran leadership. And we're not putting words in Scott's mouth, but I think Scott understands if you're going to build with young players, you're going to need some veterans who can play, not the veterans Absolutely. Who are sitting on the bench telling the guys what to do. No, you need some veterans who are out there in the trenches with those guys so that they can learn on the job, right? That's
no, absolutely.
That to me seems like something that you could say I can build on and we can find out. The other part where I'm just going to get locker room guys, that doesn't make sense to me.
I've heard the term that will sit well, and what is that? That makes no sense to me. I don't want a non-competitive guy that wants to sit. Well, exactly, exactly, there, exactly. That will sit well. So when I heard that line, I said, "Oh, that's a new one." I mean, so now we want to be non-competitive.
Yeah.
Let me add one thing on as BJ talks about this, the whole tanking phenomenon, because I never was one that subscribed to that. You know, all the years in Detroit, that was a non-option, non-negotiable for us.
Times have changed.
So, but now I've been in a situation when we first arrived to Orlando, where Dwight Howard basically had been promised before we even got there that he was going to be, had to be traded. We had to move him. Okay, then you have to start rebuilding when you lose a player like that. That's different. We would have liked to even try to keep him, but didn't happen. So then you start rebuilding from that point. That's a little different. I used to have this line. I would say this all the time. If you selectively institutionalize losing, because that's what tanking is. You're saying, okay, we're going to strip it down of any kind of talent that could help us win in first two, three years, let's say. So now you're going to institutionalize the losing, but you're going to have players and coaches that are living that every day. And so now that seeps into your building. There's no guarantee that you will ever get that out. And we've seen that over and over again with organizations that have tried that. And all of the carnage and the emotions in your building are not good, you know, and it just trickles down throughout the rest, you know, it spreads through the rest of your organization that losing is a part of who we are. And you don't, you know, that's not something that you just flip a switch one day and say, oh, it's going to work. And to BJ's point, you're doing that. All of the people who would be strong supporters of this were saying, well, you know, statistics show that star players and people that you build around are going to be drafted in the top five. Well, we don't know who's coming out in every draft every year. And sometimes those guys prove to be as good as what they were advertised to be. Sometimes not. Sometimes you go in the lottery with the most balls, but your percentages are still the same as the team with the second, third, and I believe now the fourth worst team. So it's a true lottery system, a luck system to fall into place and get a pick, and that player be there who's good enough, who's going to mature enough, who's hungry enough, who can handle coming into an organization that's bad and be able to turn it around with all of these obstacles against them. So there's definitely no guarantee in that at all. You know, I was always taught, look, okay, you're going to get in and you're going to assess what your team is, what your situation is, and we're going to build from there. Trying to intentionally go backwards. If we go backwards because we just were getting beat, not good enough, that's one thing. You know, you can figure out how to recover from that. But when players start to sense that the front office and ownership are tinkering with the competitive nature of the game, I just think it ultimately backfires against you.
Yeah. Well, Danny Ainge did this before when he rebuilt the Celtics after trading away Pierce and Garnett. But he got the Brooklyn Nets to do the tanking for him while he was fielding a team that was competing for the playoffs every season. And then they acquired Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown through other teams' picks rather than having to tank and get his own picks high up in the lottery. Actually, just going back to the Olympics for a sec, the question that I've been asked by a lot of people in the last couple of days is about Jason Tatum not playing in that semifinal, and he played a couple minutes in that gold medal game. We've spoken about this again on the show before, but then I saw the pictures of the gold medals after the thing, and he's there with his newborn child. And I just think, if the man just had a newborn child on a human level, why would you take him if you're not going to play him? Let that man be at home with his family and enjoying the offseason instead of sitting on your bench. I don't know what the deal was and why it occurred like that. Maybe if you played him, you wouldn't have been down so big to Serbia in the first place. You wouldn't even need to come back from it. But it was just kind of weird to me seeing that from the Team USA camp. Did you guys have any final thoughts on Tatum not playing?
The moral of it for me really is looking forward to 2028 as you put that team together.
No Steph, no that's LeBron, gonna, no
that's
KD.
Gonna be, that's gonna, yeah, but that's going to be a question for a lot of guys now coming onto that team. They're not, you know, again, obviously I'm sure Jason Tatum is happy he won the gold. He was a true professional through the whole thing. But you know deep down inside internally, he was hurt by not playing those couple of games. This guy just won an NBA championship, you know, considered one of the top five players in the NBA. And he can't get into two games. And and what is being told is this, it was a math problem, you know, not enough minutes and too many players. So, okay, I get that when I hear a coach say that. But, you know, I'm from the player's perspective, I get his side too and what he's feeling like. And so moving forward to Los Angeles and putting that team together, you're going to have some different conversations if you're Grant Hill and Sean Ford and those guys are putting the team together as you start recruiting guys to play in that. You're going to have to be very clear to them about their roles and because I'm sure some star players will look at that and say, no, I don't want that to be me. What happened to Jason? That would be my guess.
Yep. BJ, do you have any final thoughts on that?
I have a lot of thoughts on this. But again, mission accomplished. They won. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. That's why we came here to do. So now, you know, one of the things as in a leadership position, right? When I played, I held myself responsible and accountable. As an executive now in the position I am, my job is I try to keep things as simple as possible. And I don't want to make this a complex problem. You have 12 players on the team. Okay. If you're going to lead men, you got to know them. You got to know who you lead, and they have to know you. Every year since I've been involved in the NBA, 12 people have been invited to the All-Star weekend to play. Now, unless my math is off, since I've been a part of the NBA, I've seen 12 players every year get invited. And somehow, some way, they figured that out to get those people to play. Okay? Every year with our friend, not just my friend, Mo, you know Coach Sir. Scott not only knows Coach Sir, he's worked with Coach Sir. We have an obligation to never leave a scar on a young person that we're with. If you take this job serious, I'm not saying you take it for whatever you're doing. Some of us take this very seriously. We are lifers in this business. We have a job not to leave a scar on any kid who gives us their time and their energy into this profession. The fact that this young man couldn't get in the game. So I'm going to go to the rules of coaching, and I've never coached. Scott has coached, but I haven't coached at the professional level. No one loses a game in the first quarter. If this is not your guy that you're going to finish the game with, because we all know, and the players all know, when it comes down to winning, put in who you believe or put in who you perceive as your best players. I can live with that one. But we know coaching 101 because we go to those coaching clinics every summer out there. I've been doing this for over decades now. And every coach that coached over the last 20 years in the NBA, I've seen them. It's one thing that is universal. You don't lose no games in the first quarter. So you mean to tell me that Halliburton and Tatum couldn't get a 5-minute run in the first quarter?
And it's also in the previous Olympics where they played against France in the gold medal game, they won by 5 points, but Jason Tatum was the second leading scorer on that team after Kevin Durant.
I'm just saying what I saw now.
So it's not like his style is not suited to FIBA.
And again, mission accomplished. However, when a young man comes to my class, you're going to get an A. And what I mean by that is we're going to figure this out together. Okay? We're going to figure this out. I got to figure this one out. These young people, especially a player that's as accomplished as this young man is.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is a scar. Now, we have left a scar on him now. Mm-hmm. We. And I'm saying we because I take this job professionally. I'm not coaching. I'm not involved with USA basketball. But you know what? I understand the responsibility when you sit in that seat in a position of leadership. That is a tough job to divvy out those minutes. Like, I think we all agree on that. Like, that's a tough job. But we signed up for this. It's a tough job for me as an agent now. When I have to go back and tell the client, hey, I couldn't, such and such said they're moving in a different direction. These are the tough calls. But, you know, we can't just highlight the positives all the time. We got to tell what the job really entails. Leadership. We now have left a scar on a first team All-NBA player for the last two seasons and world champion. I don't know how he's going to recover from that. And I don't know if there's anything we can say that's going to recover from that. But I do know this. I will be tuned in to the Golden State Boston Celtics game next year to find out.
Exactly.
To find out what's going on. Because we left a scar on this young man. Because this young man, I understood maybe Halliburton's situation. Maybe.
He can't defend. It makes sense.
Maybe. I could. Maybe. Just like Christian Laettner. I understood why Christian Laettner on the 92. I understood that. Jason Tatum?
Right. Yeah, no. Yeah.
No. I'm gonna go back to what the kids say now. The math is not math in here.
And Steve Kerr said that's a math problem, is why he's on the game.
Exactly.
Now, I'm gonna leave it at that. Because there are you have to have principles when you are leading men, when you're leading people. We have to find a way to make this right. We got to find a way. I'm not saying he had to finish the game. I'm not saying he had to get all of the shots. I understand. No. You got Kevin Durant and Jason Tatum. Now, I understand. That's a tough. But you can't tell me that Jason Tatum is not capable of scoring 15 to 20 points just like Kevin Durant did. Or just like what we saw Steph Curry. It was a number of players that was capable.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying this for leaders, coaches, players. Jason Tatum did an excellent job of doing this one thing. And this is why I love the game. And now Jason Tatum, he's always been one of the players I've always admired from afar. But now he's one of my favorite players because he was a professional. During a very difficult time.
No question.
Now, that to me is what's going to set him apart. Because not only is he a good kid, not only is he a good basketball player, great basketball player, but now I know he's a professional because you find out a lot about people in tough moments. And this had to be a tough moment for him. In front of his peers, he is not one of the best. He has been the best as a team player and individually. And for this to happen to him in this moment by us, this didn't happen by someone who didn't know. He is first team all NBA, Scott.
Exactly.
Yeah, no. NBA champion, best record in the league. All of the things that we just sat here 5 minutes ago talking about tanking. And here's a guy who just did it. And then, Scott, we can't find 5 minutes.
Yeah, no way should he have DMP next to his name.
At
on
all.
A team. On a USA team.
I don't care who's on the team.
Hurt. Exactly, yeah. No, on a USA team that's put together. No way, you know, and I think everybody knows that and would like to know because they're, you know, the truth may never come out, but okay, if you're a coach, they're quote unquote looking at matchups and all these things. You know what? Are you saying he's not good enough to be in there? Because that's what, you know, when you do that, when you don't play at all, that is the inference that people will take care of. Well, I'm afraid to put him in there because we're going to fall behind. Or he can't guard this person, or he can't do that.
He's probably one of the most versatile defenders on the whole team.
Oh, no, I agree. No, but like, I'm just saying. So
there's
that's
no
why
reason anyone's giving me. Obviously, his three-point shooting wasn't the best throughout the exhibition games and throughout the Olympics that he did play in. But if he's not playing or he's getting 1 or 2 minutes here, then his shots can't go in because he's not even able to take them.
But he got two DMPs in the tournament, right?
Ridiculous.
Yeah, that's just, you know, that's...
Yeah, it's a tough spot. It's a tough call, and we get that. Leadership is tough. It's supposed to be tough. However, we have to figure this one out.
Yep.
Yeah.
We have to... We, in this job that we love and that we signed up for this, we have to figure this out because no young person is going to leave my office with a scar on them. I have an obligation to tell the truth and figure this thing out. And the truth is that young man there deserved every opportunity by his work ethic, his commitment to the game. Mo talked about it. Time away from his family. And he earned it.
He earned that. He earned, and listen, injuries are part of the game. That man there practiced, did everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, like I said, the only thing we could do is move forward. But his professionalism
is the one thing that I
want to say, you know what? That says it all about him and his character. Mm-hmm. I am a fan. I have nothing else to say about Jason Tatum.
But I'll say this.
Who he is.
He has had the best 2024. Olympic gold, NBA champion, another Jordan Brand sneaker, cover of Sports Illustrated, and most importantly, cover of NBA 2K25, which you can pre-order from the link in the bio. And whilst you're there, subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or whatever you get your podcast from. How about that one to wrap it up?
Hey, we'll be back. And last thing.
I love it, Bo.
I'm going on a campaign right now, JT for MVP next year, right now. I'm saying this right now, because you know what?
That would be awesome.
Everybody, when you say you got to find a reason to play, you know what I mean? Sometimes you got to reach down.
All I'm going to say is don't mess with what's working. The Celtics can play exactly how they played last season.
You don't need to let
the ego creep in and go for an MVP
run. But he, you know, legitimately, you know, for one while there, early in the year, was in the conversation.
What he does on the basketball court has become unappreciated. For example, in the NBA Finals, he was guarding the opponent team centers. He was making plays for his teammates. With most games, he was leading them in assists in that playoff run. But people just wanted to talk about his three-point shooting. So that's what the game has devolved into. I'm sure we'll have an episode talking about MVP and all of this as the season creeps towards us. But until next time, my good people, we appreciate tuning in. We'll be back with more very soon, and get buckets.